topologically ordered phases in 3+1 dimensions. And the bulk boundary correspondence may mean various things, but here's the story from 2+1 dimensions, which I want to somehow generalize to higher dimensions. So in topologically ordered phases, you have a bulk excitations, which are anions. And if you, on the other hand, if you have a boundary to the system, it typically supports some sort of edge excitations. And the something you see on the edge closely related to the bulk excitation. So here in the edge, you may have, for example, chiral boson for, in the case of fractional quantum Hall effect. It's just an ordinary field theory in 1+1 lower dimensions. But if you put the bulk excitations, the excitations on the boundary feel the presence of the bulk excitations in the following way. So think of putting a quasi-particle, some anion here in the bulk. Okay, but anions are not purely local object. In some sense, it's a non-local object, which is the excitation which emerges only at the low energy. Okay, so since it's a non-local excitation, it has some sort of branch cut. So this branch cut can emit it from this quasi-particle, and it may end at the boundary. Okay. So in the presence of bulk quasi-particle, edge excitation still feel the presence of the bulk quasi-particle through this string or branch cut, so it may obey a periodic, the twisted boundary conditions. Think of the quasi-particle or sigma particle in the P plus IP superconductor. It's a vortex, and the vortex comes with the branch cut. It ends at the boundary to the system. And the boundary, there's a Majorana fermion mode, for example. Majorana fermion can obey periodic or antiperiodic boundary condition, but it actually controlled by the presence of the bulk quasi-particle. Okay. So here's an example of a bulk boundary correspondence. So we may be able to see something about the bulk excitation through the window of the edge, so the boundary physics. Okay, so you can extract some data of the bulk excitation from the boundary field theory. So Xiaogan, I think on Thursday, introduced the S and T matrices using the defined for the set of degenerate ground state, which you can get by putting the theory on the, for example, torus. So you have a set of ground state, degenerate ground state, but there's the large diffeo acting on this spatial torus, and the large diffeo it's diffeo, so it preserves the spatial manifold. But it may still induce some transformation among the ground state multiplet. So that defined is some matrices, which we call S and T matrices. That is encoding the braiding statistics and the spin of quasi-particles in the ball, which Xiaogan explained. On the other hand, again, following the philosophy of looking into the box through the window of the edge theory, you can consider now the boundary field theory defined on the two-dimensional space-time torus. It's not a space torus, it's a space-time torus. And they consider the partition functions of the boundary field theory. Since the boundary field theory can obey various kinds of boundary condition, you can define a set of a partition function, each obeying a particular boundary condition. And as it turns out, if you act with the diffeo of the space-time torus, it induces the transformation among the multiplet of partition function. Okay, and so in this way, you can define a something quite similar to the S and T matrices in bulk. I mean, actually, it's S and T matrices in the edge theory. And they essentially coincide. So the bulk calculation and the boundary calculation produces the same modular S and T matrices. Okay. So my question and my goal today is how about this story applied to a 3+1 dimensions, okay? So is there such a nice relation between bulk and boundary in one higher dimension, 3+1 dimension? And I will walk through with some examples, okay? I will work with three models. One is this 3+1 dimensional BF theory, which is perhaps the simplest topologically ordered phase field theory in 3+1. And I will modify this model a little bit to discuss something a little bit more interesting. Okay, but let me first start with the 3+1 dimensional BF theory, which is essentially a ZK gauge theory. And it is going to be my canonical example. Okay. One motivation is to generalize this bulk boundary scheme to one higher dimensions, which is already interesting exercise. But there's an interesting motivation. Another interesting motivation in doing this. So in one higher dimension, statistics of quasi-particle may be something more interesting, a little bit more complicated than the quasi-particle statistics in 2+1 dimensions. For example, for the loopy excitations in 3+1 dimensions, it has been proposed that they may obey interesting braiding statistics, which involve three loops, okay, which I will explain later. So there's some model constructing, and I think on Wednesday, Mike Levin explained that to you, and I wasn't there, so I don't know, but that's a part of motivation. So by using boundary field theory, can we extract interesting topological data which exists in the 3+1 dimensional topologically ordered phases, okay? But let me step back and let me start with this canonical example of 3+1 dimensional BF theory, which is a very simple theory described by this action. It's an action defining four dimensional space time manifold. I have a two form gauge field. I have another one form gauge field which couple this way. This coupling K is a level. Like a level of the Chan-Simons theory, which is integer. And I put these some sort of external feed, J quasi particle and J quasi vortex, which I don't pass integrate, so it's an external object. You can think of this as a externally put quasi particle and the quasi vortices. Or another way to think about this is like you're putting the Wilson loop and Wilson surfaces in the theory. So J quasi particle is a three form and this is external. So this represents a Poincaré dual of the J quasi particle, represent the particle trajectory in space time. Okay, fixing such a quasi particle trajectory is equivalent to introducing a Wilson line. And similarly, you can consider a quasi-vortex current, which is a two-form, and it represents a loopy excitation in BF theory, and it couples to B. Okay, so it introduces some sort of surface operator in the theory. Okay, as a quick remark, there are few applications of this system to systems of interest, for example, BCS superconductor and the discrete gauge series. But perhaps in more modern context, it may be related to bosonic topological insulators or fermionic topological insulators and so on and so forth. So there's some motivation behind the theory, okay? And this theory is not new, of course, but bulk boundary correspondence in the way I describe in 2+1 dimension, as far as I know, nobody has established. So let me go through a explicit calculation to see the bulk boundary correspondence within this model. Okay. Okay, so but before doing this, let me say this model features a particle string statistics. Okay, so there's the point-like particle in the theory, which is represented by a Wilson line. There is a loop-like excitations, which in the context of, for example, superconductor, we interpret it as a vortex. And they have a interesting statistics, which you can see, for example, by integrating over A and B in the presence of some background, J quasi particle and the quasi vortex. Okay, and then we look at what is the phase we get. Okay, and so this, after you integrate over A and B, you have a phase effective action, which depends on the linking number of quasi vortex and the quasi particle, which shows there's the linking statistics between particle and vortex groups. Okay, so now let's move on to I should also say that there's the ground state degeneracy, because we are talking about topological order phases. So you can define a 3 plus 1 dimensional version of S and T matrices, which I will introduce later. And the question is, can we extract the S and T matrices acting among degenerate ground state? Can we extract S and T matrices using boundary field theory? Okay, so this is the bulk description of the model. What is the surface theory? Well, so surface theory is looks like this. So there is a one form, which is, it's a one form, but I set the temporal component to be zero by a gauge choice. So this I and j runs from 1, 2. It's only the spatial index, and it couples to a scalar phi. So there are two kinds of fields on the boundary. One is a scalar, the other is the vector, and they are connected in this very phase term, which inherits the BF coupling in the bulk. Okay, you can also add the some sort of kinetic terms for these fields, which comes from a microscopic detail on the surface. But I, of course, choose this V as quadratic in theta and phi, because otherwise I cannot solve. But that part is sort of microscopic dependent, but this part is topological, which comes from the bulk. Okay. That's right. So this is one choice, I would say. So
this is a pretty well used deal, but this is the surface theory. Not
what is called deep surface theory?
THE, as opposed to a surface
theory. Not a surface theory.
Ah, okay.
And you also
said
that this is, V is ambiguous, but mm-hmm. but the first term is unique because it comes from the box.
Ah, okay. So, first of all, I should say in general that boundary to the bulk, usually not unique, of course, in general. And you can choose various different termination to the bulk, of course. And there's various example known. So I pick particular one. And the hope is that as far as we speak about something topological, it may not be affected by the choice of the boundary, which I haven't established in this example, but that's a general belief.
It's the same as saying that when you solve a differential equation with a boundary,
yes,
you
yes,
have different boundary
yes.
conditions.
That's
so
right.
With Neumann, you could put
Dirichlet. Yeah, that's right. So yeah,
this is a choice.
That's right. This is a choice, as I say. Yeah.
This is a choice.
Yeah.
Does this come from requiring invariance under certain?
That's the one way to get it. Yes, yes. So you write down the Gauss-Rohr constraint on the bulk, but Gauss-Rohr constraint is violated at the boundary, which is you can add this to. I mean that's why you get this term.
And just under those gauge transformations, G is transforming as well as A.
Yes. Yeah. So there are two. Yeah. So I didn't say, but there are two kinds of. There's a gauge transformation. They are charged under the gauge transformations. But you can put some boundary condition to the system, and you can get this boundary theory. Absolutely.
So the bulk theory, is a Z mod K gauge theory. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so, can you say what the boundary theory is in those terms? to the section of some associate. I don't see the A and the B in those formulas.
Yeah, so one way to see this is what Fiona is saying. So because this is coupling between B and A, so B enforces the flux of A, dA to be zero in the bulk.
Right.
So you solve this constraint in the bulk. So A is d theta, for example.
Yes.
But this is in the bulk, right? So then you get nothing in the bulk because it's topological theory. But you have a boundary. Let me go to this page.
So it's a section of this.
Yeah, so you have A is, for example, D theta, but A is D phi, for example, in the bulk. But the excitation is Wilson loops in this model. So you integrate this D phi in the bulk, but let's say this L is now ending at the boundary. So it picks up a boundary condition, which is phi, which is like, in some sense, like a quark, right? So it's open string, so there's open end is charged, and this is now at the end. So this is the physical description of phi. For theta, you have a similar thing. It descends from B. You have a surface which ends on a surface operator, which ends on the boundary, but now it's a Wilson loop operator on the boundary. It's a one form, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I didn't describe the derivation of this, but it's a known surface theory to this model, okay? Yeah, so this is a gapless. Yeah, this is gapless surface theory. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, absolutely. I choose B to be quadratic, like a d phi, d theta. So it's a gapless theory. Okay, so now how can we do this game with surface theory? Before I start computing anything, let me tell you something about the boundary theory. So boundary theory is almost equivalent to the 2 plus 1 free scalar theory. Okay, so in free scalar theory, you have a phi. It's not the script phi. Sorry, this is the ordinary free boson theory. So there's a canonical commutator phi, dt phi. That's the free boson theory. In this theory, essentially, d theta is playing the role of dt phi. Okay, so you're distributing the degrees of freedom into degrees of freedom of free boson theory into bar phi and the theta. And the canonical commutator is isomorphic to each other. And the free scalar theory, so when k is one in particular, you recover the ordinary free scalar theory, which is, there's nothing wrong about this theory. So it can exist in 2 plus 1D in its isolation. So when k is 1, theory is equal to scalar boson, and it's modular invariant. There are no interesting S and T matrices you can extract. Okay, but things changes if k is bigger than 1 or larger than, bigger than 1. Yeah. Okay, another way to describe this theory is to start from a d phi and d theta, which are not constrained, but then you can impose one condition like this. Okay, so then in 2 plus 1, a gauge field has the same degrees of freedom as boson. So you have this is two copies of boson theory. But if you impose one constraint, you reduce these degrees of freedom to essentially the degrees of freedom of a scalar boson. So this is analogous to the I want to make an analogy to a chiral boson theory at the edge of 2 plus 1D topological phase where you have a chiral boson. That can be viewed as an ordinary boson, but with one constraint where you restrict, you kind of combine left and right. Well, actually, you remove left, let's say. So, I just want to say this is the description of the surface, which has some similarity to the edge of quantum Hall system, okay. So now going back to the issue of bulk boundary, as I said, I want to see bulk excitation through the window of boundary field theory. So here's how I see the the bulk excitations from boundaries. So in boundary theory, you can impose boundary condition. So Ry, R2, 2 pi R1 and 2 pi R2 is a size of my spatial torus, okay? There's a time direction, okay? And so for phis, I introduce the boundary condition, like a twisted boundary condition, by this integer capital M1 and M2 for each direction of the spatial torus, okay? You can also specify the amount of flux supported by zeta on the spatial manifold. So my space-time is S1 times sigma. This is the time direction. Maybe this is just R. The theory, spatially living on d, phi, d sigma, and the, if you integrate this flux over d sigma, this is the flux supported by zeta, and that takes some value. Yes.
The condition. Uh-huh. What do you gain by keeping zeta in the action?
Yeah, just okay. So that's right. So yeah, in practice for nothing. But I want to make a connection with the bulk excitation supported by B and the bulk excitation supported A, which kind of makes presentation smooth if I split this way. That's all.
So if where we replace the constraint, the boundary, like there's a scalar.
Yeah, in particular, when k is 1, it's equivalent. Partition function is equivalent. Commutator is isomorphic to each other, everything. But when k is actually larger than 1, I prefer to keep this notation, okay? Because it makes clear to the connection to the bulk, which I'm interested. So for...
I have a question.
Yeah.
Maybe it's even earlier.
Yeah.
You made the analogy to 2 plus 1.
Uh-huh.
This theory is not analogous to U1 level K. What you had in mind is that it is analogous to U1 level K in 2 plus 1 dimensions, which has a chiral boson. But I think it's more analogous to ZK.
In fact, that's perhaps more precise analogy.
That's more precise?
Yes.
First, because there's a ZK gate symmetry.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly.
And second, because the action has this off-diagonal nature.
In fact, I will talk about the dimensional reduction later, where
right,
in fact,
but,
yeah.
But in the ZK, mm-hmm. as we all know, there are no boundary excitations.
Right.
The boundary, we can argue whether there is or there isn't a topological field theory on the boundary, but the boundary is clearly gapped. So how come your theory is not gapped? It is not gapped.
Yeah, so that's actually a very good question.
So what I think you did, you added some stuff that is not really essential. You can always take a gap theory and add a gapless mode.
That's right.
The main point is in the stuff that is gap.
So that's right. So you're absolutely right. If I take the BF theory in 2 plus 1, I have a non-chiral edge on the boundary. And this theory, you can make it module invariant, right? Because it's a non-chiral theory. The way I think about it is that it's module invariant if I introduce the ordinary boundary condition. It's a compactified boson, so you can introduce a boundary condition where phi is equal to phi plus 2 pi r.
I think I'm saying something much stronger. It's not non-chiral. It's even gapped.
Yeah, I understand.
So adding all sorts of non-chiral stuff and then
right.
arguing with them is besides the point.
Right. I myself actually kind of confused about this.
In a trivial way.
That's right. But I can twist the boundary condition. So I can somehow ZK orbifold on the boundary. So then you create a different sectors at the boundary. So instead of having boundary condition, which is phi goes to phi plus 2 pi, I create a series of partition function where phi goes to 2 pi mod k and so on and so forth. And the S transformation and T transformation bring one partition function into each other.
So say this is this compact scalar theory
yes.
on the boundary.
Yes.
But however, with some interesting compactification radius.
Yeah, you can introduce non-local excitations. You can kind of force a non-local excitation in the theory, which you don't usually consider in the chiral boson theory. Because if you specify compactification condition, you have a set of E to I phis, and that's it usually. But you can force a fractional kind of particles on the boundary, and the but then fractional part is not closed under modular transformation. That's.
But this one is not chiral boson. So
this
sense,
is not as chiral. This
the
is not.
Is gappable.
But is gappable.
You study the gappless limit simply.
That of course true. That's of course true. That is of course true. Yeah, but it's gappable. That's also true. Yes. Okay.
I mean, so is this the practice master theory of on the boundary just a computational convenience? I mean, in principle, you could have taken that BF theory.
Yes.
Quantize
it on T3. That's of course true. That's of course. So,
right.
Yeah, you can impose topological boundary conditions to these systems.
And local collections with those.
Yes. So I think that's absolutely right. From my personal taste, I want to see some vigorous freedom floating around on the boundary, which if, with which I can sort of play with that. But that may be, as I said.
Your answer might be contaminated by your choice of boundary conditions.
Yeah, so that's the belief I have no proof for this, but as I said, there's many boundary possible termination to the bog, and I pick particular one just for my convenience. And my belief is that the topological result should not be contaminated by this gapless degrees freedom.
Because this is a free field theory.
Yeah.
So since it's a free field theory, it's completely solvable.
Yeah.
We don't need to belief into the story.
That's right. So for before doing this exercise, we did 2+1 the BF theory, and we did just by describe I input some twisted or orbifolded boundary conditions, and we check that it reproduces the known bulk S and T matrices. I mean, of course, it should be, and that's. But we didn't try anything more general than this. And David said may be right. You can just take 1+1 the topological theory, and we may be able to get some data. But we didn't.
It was actually done, so it's not just that you could do it.
No, okay. So I didn't do this calculus. So I don't know, but that's a possible thing to do. I'm saying just I did this exercise for the gapless choice of the boundary degrees freedom, and the result matches with the bar calculation. And here's the kind of parallel calculation 3+1 dimensions. Okay. So the boundary bulk. So we put the this is the my spatial spatial manifold. So if I put the flux in B in the bulk, it essentially produces a flux at the boundary. This is coming from just from the equation of motion. And this induces this boundary condition where I split the this capital M into the non-fractional part and the fractional part. But if you put the one unit of quasi-particle, you just get one, for example. Then it twists the boundary condition and the boundary theory. If you put K units, you just get the ordinary boundary condition. But as far as this flux in the bulk is smaller than K, you sort of twist the boundary theory. The similar thing works for the phi field, where you put now the Wilson line operator, which kind of emits this sheet or branch cut at the boundary. So whenever phi field go around the spatial cycle in the boundary, it picks up some weird phase, which is represented by this. Okay, so the what I do now is to take this theory and we impose this boundary condition and compute S and T matrices. Okay, so here's some details of S and T matrices. So to consider large diffeo acting on the boundary of the system, I put my theory on surface theory on space-time torus T3, and there's some background metric, and it specifies it's a flat background metric, so it specifies some sort of a rough shape of the space-time torus, and it is a parameterized by 5 modular parameter as opposed to 2 in 1+1 dimensional case, is they have more parameters, but nevertheless, the structure is very similar in the sense that there's a set of large diffeos acting on this space-time torus. And that's SL3Z. It's a mapping class group of a three-dimensional torus. So we kind of upgrade SL2Z to SL3Z. So SL3Z is still generated by two generators, just like SL2Z. So one generator looks like a U2. So it's kind of like a T transformation in analogy to 2 plus 1D theory. Another one is this U1 transformation, which acts as a S transformation in TX direction. And you compose this transformation with another S transformation acting on X and Y direction. Together, it gives you U1, which is generator of SL3Z. So by using U1 and U2, you can generate all kinds of SL3Z transformation. And I will consider the action of U1 and U2 onto the multiplet of partition functions. And I will call them a S and T matrices, okay? Just like in 2 plus 1 dimensions. So here's the kind of a, I don't write a solution because it's sort of complicated, but it's some sort of theta functions. But partition function is labeled by boundary conditions. So for each fixed boundary condition, you have a partition function. But as I said, I care only the fractional part of the bulk excitation.
The boundary condition is M1, M2, and M0.
That's right.
Integer.
That's right. But I only care about fractional parts. So I use a small n to describe this. So small n, 0, 1, 2 runs from 0 to k minus 1. OK, so there's a set of partition function labeled by these integers. And the acting with S and T matrices, you transform one partition function into another. OK. So that's what we computed explicitly. And here's a result, which is the result for the BF theory. So I don't want to spend too much time, but I just want to say that this matches exactly the bulk calculation, OK? So at this level, we established the bulk boundary correspondence. You can recover bulk S and T matrices from the purely boundary calculations. Okay, any question? Otherwise, I'll move on to slightly more complicated examples.
So I think I understand how you calculated S and T for the surface. Can you say a word about how I would figure out what those are for the bulk theory?
You mean the interpretation?
Well, the S and T matrix, how do I look at the bulk BF action and read off
So here it's a calculation in terms of ground state.
Okay.
So it's construct a set of ground state and take a particular basis, which is called minimum entanglement basis, because I mean that maybe you are familiar with. So you have a construction of a ground state, and you can just compute the S and T matrices out of the set of ground states on spatial T3 in the bulk. Okay. So here, T3 is the space-time T3. And instead of dealing with ground states, I'm dealing with the partition functions. OK.
So S and T are part of SL3Z or SL2Z?
SL3Z,
So this S will be like another generator, exchange XYZ, something like that.
Yeah, together, yeah. One and two direction, and then two and three directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of moves around these Wilson loops and surfaces. So that's how you get different. I mean, that's your paper. So that's right. So that's the physical interpretation. Okay. So this is my model one, and it seems like everything is working as expected. So let me complicate my life a little bit by introducing some more terms, okay? So the one model which we looked at is the model with the theta term, okay? So in addition to BF term, these are just a kind of mnemonic to keep track of Wilson loop and Wilson surfaces, but I added one more term here, which is the theta term, okay? But theta here is not a constant, and we introduce theta as a kind of texture. So it has some interesting texture, for my case, we took this particular texture, so it kind of winds in x and y directions independently. So there's the winding number q1 in x direction, another winding number q2 in y direction. Okay. So, but this is not a dynamical field. This is the externally enforced texture. So it's like a defect. Okay. But this has an interesting effect. So that's why we kind of interested. So this term kind of a shift or a twist the original boundary condition of the BF theory, which I will get to see in a moment. Okay. So, but eventually we are not that interested in this theory because as it turns out, this theory, you cannot make it modular invariant on the boundary, okay? So the reason is very simple because this is a texture which is fixed, not dynamical. So as you perform a S and T transformation, you move around the location of the defect and with that, you cannot get modular invariant. But that's a typical situation in the theory with defect, okay? But this has a kind of give us a more interesting motivation to more complicated model, which I call models three. So let me spend some time on this. So how does this shift happens? Okay, again, it's very simple. So from the equation motion, theta term changes the equation motion in this way. So previously we had the A couples A, we had this equation and this equation, but without this term, right? So a B sources quasi-particle, A sources quasi-vortex, right? But here's an additional complication now because of theta, B actually sources both particle and the vortices, okay? So that's how we get this shift in the boundary condition. It is shifted from M0 by the cross product of the winding number of theta and the boundary condition X and Y direction. That simply comes from the boundary condition. There's an alternative way to see this shift. So instead of using this theory with theta term, you can consider just ordinary BF theory. Just ordinary BF theory, but you can modify the coupling to quasi-particle and quasi-vortex. And this S prime share the same equation motion as the original theory, okay? But here, this I already explained. So quasi-particle, turning on quasi-particle, which is a line-like object, you create a Wilson line. And the Wilson line can end on the surface, which creates this e to I phi, or e to I m phi, where m is an integer. On the surface, since you modify the coupling between quasi-vortex current and A, somehow you change the definition of your surface operator, which now depends on phi and the theta I didn't write down bulk expression, but starting from the bulk expression, which is controlled by this coupling, and you again do the you create the surface which ends at the boundary. At the boundary, it looks like a loop, but the loop excitation on the boundary is now modified by the presence of this theta term. Okay, so now you impose the condition where phi is a compact variable because it appears as a e to I m phi, or to be more precise, the zero mod of phi. Whereas here, originally, I introduced the flux of theta to be a compact variable, okay, because it appears on the exponential. But it's now modified by this theta. So that's how we get the shift of this m0 boundary condition eigenvalue, which is just a flux of d theta, so d theta, okay. But as I said, eventually we discovered that this model cannot be made modular invariant for obvious reason. So let me now move on to my third model. Okay, so in the third model, I will try to couple two BF theories together. Okay, so the obvious physical interpretation is that it may describe ZK cross ZK gauge theory. Okay, but this is the kind of situation which is already looked at by Wan and Levin a year ago, where they noticed that whereas for single ZK, H4 is zero, whereas for ZK cross ZK, there are H4 of ZK cross ZK is non-zero. So that means there should be a K square different ways to introduce ZK cross ZK gauge field. Okay. So how can this show up within continuum field theory language? That's my question now. So I have I tried to couple two BF theories, but there should be, because of this fact, there should be more than one way to do it. How do I see it? Okay. Also, I should say different ways to gauge ZK cross ZK symmetry can be distinguished by the bulk three loop braiding statistics. Okay. So it seems like we should be able to recover this by using BF theory. So that's my goal now. So first thing you may think is the cubic theory. Okay, I have a BF theory, IJ runs from 1, 2, so this is just two copies of BF theory, but you wanna couple them. So for example, you can introduce a coupling in A's with this cubic term, A1 wedge, A2 wedge, D wedge 2, and P1, P2, just for the moment, it's just a parameter and it controls the coupling between two. So this action is motivated in two ways. So first of all, from our point of view, we have this this theory where I have this theta here. As I said, theta is a non-dynamical stuff. So that's why you cannot achieve modular invariance. So one may try to give some dynamics to this guy theta, which may take another form of VF theory. Okay, so this is the cubic coupling. Okay, so that's my perspective. But of course, if you look at also the perspective from three loop braiding statistics, to get anything that may involve three objects, you may want to have cubic. Okay, and I'm saying this is just guess, and I'm not even sure if this is a kind of heresy theory. And for example, you have to modify the notion of gauge invariance because changing, so the gauge transformation of B act as before, but if you make a gauge transformation on A, it has to be supplemented, this change in B, like this. So it's kind of more complicated theory. And the, yeah.
Why don't you write this word to determine AA, which appears naturally? Is that suppressed?
Yeah, so that's of course, as I said, this is not a unique way. And the my perspective was that to give a kinetic term to theta term previously. That's why we ended up writing this. But I'm not saying by no means this is the most general thing. But yeah, for example, you can play with this and that. Yeah, the absurdity, yeah.
You mentioned that you want to use this gauge theory to describe ZK cross ZK gauge theory, but
yeah.
You're still checking, you want gauge invariance, right?
That's so.
But, and also another question is, this gauge transformation, is this some arbitrary choice of gauge transformation so that the action is invariant, or are there other choices of gauge transformation?
I think it should be eventually dictated by the theory itself, because theory dictates what the Gauss-Rho operator is. So at least it fixes the special part of the gauge transformation, because that's what the action tells us.
Okay.
But
you mean, after you consider all the Gauss law, then this gauge transformation is almost unique.
Because these terms are linear in field, so it imposes some constraint. Constraint induces Gauss-Rho constraint, a Gauss-Rho operator generates a gauge transformation. So there may be some ambiguity, I didn't check, but this is a motivating theory for us, okay? So I'm saying this theory may be something we want to study, but I don't study this model directly because it's cubic for obvious reason, okay?
It's not really a gauge theory, right? D doesn't true form.
Yeah, it's kind of a B, it's a gauge, I'd call it a gauge D, but it's too,
It's a gauge field.
Yeah, I would call this actually gauge field.
Two-form gauge field.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So, but this is cubic theory. So, for in the last 5 minutes or so, let me tell you actual theory I studied. Okay, I consider quadratic theory. I ended up studying quadratic theory instead. So it's quadratic in BA, and so it's as the same as before. Even the coupling to quasi-particle current is the same. But I modify quasi-vortex coupling as before, okay? And theory stays quadratic, okay? That why do I want to study this model? Because this model shares the same equation of motion with the original cubic theory. So starting from the cubic theory, you write down equation of motion after substituting something. After playing with the equation of motion, you ended up the theory, quadratic theory, which reproduce the equation of motion of the cubic theory.
The previous action and this action are they just related by a definition of B?
Yeah. So there's the version of this argument for this quadratic theory, but yeah, it's not exactly the same as the. You mean you're talking about gauge transformation, right?
No, I'm saying that the previous action and this action are they related by a shift of B.
Yeah. I just shift. That's right. Yeah. But this is quadratic now. So for example, you can play integrating over A and B.
Yeah. But you require a certain compactification radius on A and B to get transformation.
That's right. So that gives rise to this twist. Let me get to this. But I'm just trying to say that this kind of still have a kind of cubic coupling in the sense that if you integrate over A and B, which you can do now because it's a quadratic theory, it induces the coupling between coupling involving three kinds of excitations: Q vortex. Okay, and this coupling, as you can expect, it does shift the quantum numbers almost as before, except this Q is another dynamical number. It has to sum over all Qs, and it comes about same way. Let me say a few more words. So the shift comes from, for example, from the cubic theory point of view, from the equation of motion perspective. Equation of motion of dB is now, previously, flux of dB sources just a Q quasi particle. But I added coupling in such a way that B sources now Q vortex also. So what it does is that if I have a vortex, J quasi particle sources B in the previous theory, but now J quasi vortex, they also source B. They source B in the following way. So if you have a linking of quasi hop linking of quasi vortices in the bulk, it induces a flux in B. It is dictated by this term, which is nothing but a link hop linking between two quasi vortex lines. Here I'm talking about spatial linking, okay? And the A part doesn't change, but this is the kind of reason why I shift these couplings. Quantum numbers, and they couple now because of this shifting. Okay, so you can go ahead and compute the partition function, which is rather involved, perhaps because I'm keeping too many degrees of freedom, of course. But nevertheless, you can compute partition functions. This is now surface. So surface partition function is now labeled by six integers, three coming from one copy, n0, n2, n2 as before, each running from 0 to k minus 1. I have another set of integers, r0, r1, r2, which coming from the second copy, okay? And you can consider action of S and T transformations on this partition function And this is the result I get. So let me show you a, yeah, so this is the result. And the, okay, so first thing I want to mention is that this seems to be consistent with other bulk calculations.
So if you don't turn on the source, it seems the bulk action is just same as before, some quadratic action.
That's right.
And so somehow, I would say this actual new type of coupling would appear in how, I don't know how they appear in on the boundary. It doesn't appear how the N1, N2, N3, R1, R3.
That's right. So it's precisely coming from
independent.
Yeah, so let me take this example. So it's similar. It's kind of a, if you play with K matrix theory in 1 plus 1 H, you can change the kinetic term, or you can play with compactification lattice. But they are kind of equivalent. It's kind of your choice which part you put information. Similar here. Instead of putting this compactification condition in the bulk action, you can entirely encode compactification condition by properly defining your excitation in the boundary. So here it's simpler because this is a non-dynamical field. So it's just saying that we combine these two excitations together. In the model three, it's more interesting because the object you look at is now a quadratic in field, but you can still work out the compactification conditions, even though they have a something quadratic in the exponential. It mixes.
More mixed the lattice in 60
minus. In some sense, if you fix the configuration of the one excitation, it defines the compactification of the other excitation. So somehow you are dynamically changing the compactification lattices. So these two compactification lattices now interact. Okay. So maybe this is my last slide. So so we get these calculations out. What are the interpretation? So I give you two interpretations. First, if you look at the S matrix, you have a term which now looks like this. So one thing to notice is this is 1 over k squared as opposed to 1 over k, which we had before in BF theory. The second is that you have a 3 quantum numbers now involved in the phase. So this is indicative of a 3 loop braiding statistics where you have a 2 loops running in the same direction, and there's a 1 base loop. That's something called base loop. So you exchange these two loops in the presence of the other loop. Here, I have N1 and R1 prime. This one means particular direction. So these excitations are running in the same direction, but there's another level which is now running in the direction orthogonal to the other two. So this is indicative of 3 loop braiding statistics. And I can only say indicative because it's, for me, it's a little bit too complicated, but in the bulk calculations, they do make the same argument, okay? Also, you can dimensionally reduce your S matrix one by one by setting, for example, the quantum number in second direction, Y direction. So if you fix this to be 0, 0, when K is 2, you recover the K matrix of Z2 cross Z2 gauge theory in 2 plus 1, whereas if you put, for example, 1, 1 for N2 and R2, you get a 2 copies of double semion theory. Okay, so without cubic coupling, without 3 loop braiding coupling, this is constant. But changing N2 R2, this K matrix doesn't change. You just shrink and kind of uniformly shrink. But now, in this case, depending on which fluxes you put in the second direction, the two-dimensional physics in 0 and 1 direction changes, and you can get even more complicated K matrix. So it's kind of understood as a correction of 2 plus 1 D K matrix, which is kind of bound together because of the third flux that the system can sustain. Okay, so that's all I want to say, and thank you for your attention.
Questions?
So assume you compute everything using a solid torus, right?
Yeah.
So can you do more complicated Riemannian torus? For example, putting a Kepler knot to get the knot complement. So the reason I ask is that degenerate the other three over, appear huge, right?
Right.
So you are missing supporting particles. Both are moves.
Right.
You are losing because you are not using sufficient topology to support it. I think the solid product of this support is square.
I see. So what is a good choice for the...
The simplest one, take the careful, not take the not complement. But I don't
know. Not complement.
I think your topology is too simple to support the other. You are losing the...
That's actually my question to Heinrich series, because Heinrich series computed partition function S3, S1 to S cross, I keep asking, how about T3? They say, oh, I do care, and I don't care about T3. But you're asking even more complicated.
Well, you are losing something.
Okay, I'm losing, really, that's the
you're
losing
here
for
RP,
oh yeah, that's right, RP3,
I see. That's usually
good. Yeah, okay, that's maybe, yeah. With, I think if I have other symmetry, the reflection time reversal,
yeah,
some other spatial symmetry, it makes sense on the...
Yeah.
Okay, RPC maybe, yeah. Yeah, okay, so yeah, I don't know the question, but it's, I don't know the answer,
know,
but it's interesting, yeah.
Sure,
but, you know, as presumably the edge is gappable.
Yes.
So I wonder, can you gap the boundary and like have a simpler calculation?
Yeah.
Usually, you know, when you have a gap at the boundary, computing partition function may be simpler. Instead of the quadratic is nice, but you do have a gapless thing. Wonder whether there is a way to
yeah.
To
so
gap the boundary,
I think there may be a way to do this, but if it is completely topological, I cannot proceed this way because it may not remember metric well. So you have to make them remember, make it remember the metric dependence. But that's of course the same as what David asked. Yeah.
Because you can put like a transcendence theory on the boundary.
Yeah.
Right.
I see.
Yep.
Yeah. So you establish some bulk boundaries correspondence, and the bulk is a physical process, like the three loop grading statistics. What's the physical process on the surface?
Yeah, so I think it is kind of encoded in the commutator of the boundary operator. So if you have a 2+1d and the 1+1d h, you have a bosonic exponential hi phi and e to phi, and they have some exchange statistics which reflects the bulk exchange statistics. Here you have a set of operators which are more complicated. One is point-like, others are loop-like, so you may be able to see the kind of a diffraction of three-loop braiding statistics by looking at commutators or three commutators of loop-like excitations on the boundary. I haven't tried. I only computed the commutators of the exponents, which are more simpler. But if you have something exponential, it's a little bit more complicated. So I didn't try, but that's perhaps the analogous thing you may want to look at.
Yeah, here maybe I make a comment. That this change, non-trivial change of a partition function actually can be interpreted as some kind of global gravitational anomaly.
Yeah, in fact.
This is ST matrix.
Right.
So therefore, this is a calculation direct linking of a boundary gravitational anomaly with a bulk data to be characterized bulk along the order. So this is a direct connection between the bulk along the order and the boundary global anomaly of the data.
That may be related to your presentation where you wrote down the gravitational transaminance term coming from the bulk. Yeah.
Yeah, so this non trivial chain of partition function can be viewed as anomalous homomorphism.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.